They say people that do like extreme sports, that's why I'm here.
Yeah.
Because there's no bandwidth or anything other than just this.
Yeah.
From life somewhere. Mm.
It's like the prisoners that escaped in Siberia and were out in really cold weather and marked some 100,000 miles or whatever. They never knew what anyone did or talked to each other. It was like this.
They made it.
Because they were just fucking cold and on the run.
What made you think of them?
I just watched a movie.
Oh.
And it was the same. Like later on, they were like, did you know Joe was like an engineer? And they were like, no. Like, we don't talk about anything.
Yeah.
It's just like survival mode.
Yeah.
Isn't that curious?
It's irrelevant, right? It's like, are we going to live or die? I don't really care what you do for a living. You know what I mean? Like, I just want to live. I just, you know, if we get past this and I think maybe I'm going to live and live and be a free person, I might give a shit. But otherwise.
Are we getting up with the current system?
Well, you know, we take certain liberties with our current condition.
I can't stay. I'm being tortured already. Oops. They're passing out papers at the council meeting.
Oh, God.
Passing out papers. I think
for
why don't you have a piece of cake? It'll make you feel better.
Oh, no, thanks.
No, I mean, it'll really make you feel better. It's magical. No, that.
Can I drive home?
Yeah, you'll drive home.
No,
no, no, no.
No, it's not.
There's only love in it, not THC.
It is made with love. Yeah, I'm sharing.
If you can start making with THC, that would be better.
Hi, Terry. It's lovely to meet you. I can't stand it.
It is THC.
Huh?
Rump?
Rump.
Did you say rump?
They're passing out papers.
Why is everybody thinking I'm drunk already?
We're just hoping, yeah. We're like alcohol, marijuana, LSD.
Stole out for a minute.
I noticed. Anything in there.
Thank you. Thank you. No. Wow. You are so kind. Bless you.
Yeah, it's kind of here. We're like, oh, it's just sugar.
I was great until the paper passing started.
What's this paper passing stuff?
Council meetings are forever free from paper.
Thanks for the cake. See you, Sharon. Bye. Love you.
Bye.
Wow, that was... Blast him.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's better than being in Siberia.
Yeah.
It's better than that kind of blast. Yeah. That was a love blast. That's what that was.
The Ninth Sky Sangha, where cake and love flow freely.
I like Ninth Sky Sangha, better than being in Siberia. It's better than being in Siberia.
Really? What can you say about it? Better than being in Siberia.
Well, hey, at least you're not a slave in Siberia.
Yeah, better things to watch.
Really?
No, this was a great movie. They walked across the Himalayas.
What's it called?
I don't fucking know. Something returning something home or something.
Oh, I'm not really sure.
Escape from Night Sky Sangha.
Something for free on Hulu.
What are we doing in Siberia?
Yes.
Huh? We have escaped.
Yeah,
right.
And they end up in India.
Do they find a guru and get enlightened?
Well, I don't know. They didn't go that far. What happened after freedom is anybody's guess.
Did you create this?
I created it.
Good job.
With her replicator.
Zucchini.
It is a recipe,
garden.
But I created it.
Yeah, well.
And it's full of THC. Very complicated.
Give me some more of that stuff.
TLC.
TLC. Well, TLC. Oh, we got
THC
the letter wrong.
That's a good marketing thing. You should use that.
The THC.
Yeah, Carrie's home cooking. Oh, THC.
That would probably sell a lot of brownies.
Yes, I think so.
From Truth or Consequences, New Mexico.
Yeah.
It's
you could have like an Amsterdam line that actually has it.
zucchini bread with THTALC. This is beginning to sound like Prairie Home Companion. Night Sky Sangha. It's better than Siberia. All the kids are above average.
All the women are strong. The men are... What is it? All the men are... No, all the women are strong. The kids are above average and the women are good looking. Or women are... The women are strong.
Don't mess it up,
the men are good looking.
The men are good looking, and the kids are above average. Something like that.
Okay. Mm-hmm. We'll try.
We'll try. Do what we can.
It's been a while.
Well, I would say that was a good conversation. I'm sated.
Go home now.
Yeah, really.
I can't continue.
Early to bed, early to rise.
Good to go.
Okay, well, the fun thing about these conversations, a dear friend of mine I had an uncle, unfortunately since deceased, who... Which one was it now? His uncle and his uncle's partner. They were lovers and, you know, life partners. The deceased uncle was an author and was going to give a talk or lecture on his work at some place in New York City, and his partner, whose name is Stanley, was being effusive about how well prepared Gene, his partner, was to be giving this presentation in front of an audience, and I should have just shut my mouth and said something like,
"Oh no,
how wonderful!" You know,
that's... you were with these folks. You were with Stanley and Gene.
We were.
Okay.
So this is a recent.
No, this goes back quite a ways.
Oh.
Okay. We were socializing at their Southampton home.
You were socializing.
I know that how I was invited anywhere. It was just...
He was in a social situation. Let's put it that way.
I found myself by mistake in a social situation. Where a beloved partner was waxing on effusively about his partner's preparation for this, right,
yep,
presentation. And I guess I just couldn't take it anymore. Far be it from me to be rude or interrupt someone else's reverie. But I went and did it again. And it was just something about, you know, whatever this is or isn't is so profoundly spontaneous, and you can't put a noose around it. You know, you can't lasso the beauty and uncertainty of life as it is. And so all of this emphasis on preparation seemed so out of character for the kind of presentation it was supposed to be.
Oh. It was not like a science forum or something like that.
No, it was math. It was in the arts.
Oh, yeah.
It was an author going to speak about his, you know, work.
Obviously, he knew very well and didn't have to prepare for it.
Well, he did. That was just it. He had given the talk, the presentation, great, careful rehearsal and preparation. And so I was, you know, an adolescent. Still am that. And spoke out about it. I mean, you can recall
curious instances throughout your life when you've encountered, you know, a primate insistence mm-hmm. on this being real or solid or manageable or non-paradoxical? And I've always been startled by those encounters. Because our instinct is this is out of control. Mm-hmm. We might like or dislike that, but still absolutely out of control. And maybe the game plan for awakening seeking, right, is to get really, really comfortable with that. When so much of our habit is control, intrusion, violation, demand, holding hostage.
Sounds like my marriage.
Right? But it's our consciousness. I mean,
but
why
I'm
shouldn't
doing. I
right?
finally stopped. It got a lot better.
Yeah. Why shouldn't it appear in our cordial or intimate relationships?
Why not?
Yeah. I mean, it's the habit of mind. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It's the habit of mind. And what is it really? I mean, what's happening, if I could be so bold, is that the displeasure starts in me. And usually not necessarily seen as a source of displeasure, but as a reaction to, right, things that aren't going my way, that are perhaps harmful, hurtful, threatening. Whether it threatens my dignity, my respect, my body, my belongings, my share of the, you know, the financial contribution to the relationship. I mean, we're threatenable in how many ways from moment to moment? Yeah. I mean, we're completely at risk in 1,000 ways from moment to moment. Which is really part of the majesty and beauty and serenity even of what life is. But we're so rejecting of this being not controllable.
Mm-hmm. You think about our culture and the safety aspect of our culture as compared to other cultures. We are off the charts compared to other cultures. And we think they're kind of crazy, which I think they are. Like snow skiing in Europe is so different than here.
I see.
Like nowhere near as well marked. Or you see the videos of car racing, and occasionally you'll see one, usually from South America or something, where the car goes off and it takes out a whole swath of spectators. Yeah. You know?
It just happened the other day, although no injuries, though, amazing.
Was it in another country?
Yeah. Was it in Italy?
Yeah. So it's like the U.S.
The running of the Jews. I mean, the running of the bulls.
Don't put any ideas in people's minds now.
Where was that from? Was that a Seinfeld episode?
No, that was from the movie with the Kazakhstan.
Oh, jeez.
Yes,
right?
Yes.
Was it?
Borat.
Borat.
I didn't watch that.
Somehow
oh,
that didn't
God.
Stick. Oh, jeez. Running out of juice.
They did that in his hometown.
Yeah. Right. Oh, it's a Colosseum type event, the running of the Jews in the streets. I'm sorry, you were saying? More cake. Hi.
Well, you guys have
oh, my God.
Sorry.
You missed the running of the Jews.
I thought this was serious.
Mm-hmm.
No, but the
it's
US
serious. It's serious good fun.
The U.S. definitely takes, we got to control this to an nth degree.
Safety.
Other countries. Safety.
Well, look at the nonstop 24/7 Ebola coverage on CNN. It's like it was slight interruptions about ISIS, you know, and a couple other little things. But, I mean, we're freaking out, you know. And, you know, one person has died so far in America. You know, it's just kind of crazy.
Yeah, they want to whip the entire society into a frenzy so that they can dictate martial law.
Yeah.
So it won't be as easy as they say.
Destroying the other countries that they don't cover.
Anyway, was there a point?
Well, oh yeah, we but laughs. You know, yeah. About that,
well, at least we're not
I was looking at that Sam Harris book.
Okay,
Waking Up.
Yep.
What's in there?
And
oh sure.
For those that don't know,
Sam Harris is,
Sam Harris is a he's an atheist. And he writes a lot about it, but he wrote a book called Waking Up because he's. You know, he's been into meditation, surprisingly enough, and things like that. But there was this video of him and Deepak Chopra, and some Deepak was like the representative.
Or you may kill a small child.
Non-dual person. I don't know, whatever you want to call it. But everybody else was into this. I think it might have been, what's the real famous guy that's always espousing his atheist views? Starts with a D. Anyway.
Dawkins.
Richard Dawkins?
Yeah. So he walked into a hornet's nest, you know. But it's just so interesting because, you know, I didn't really like what Deepak was saying that much either because he's going on about the universe and quantum physics and stuff like that. And they're like, well, you're not a quantum physicist, you know. And,
oh, good.
You know. And
I'm glad they told him off.
It's all very contentious. And
yeah.
And each side was making great points, but I'm like, I don't know, this isn't working for me. You know, in other words, there is something that gets beyond that whole thing. You know, it's like you can either put your energies in defining your beliefs a little better or what you see to be true or whatever.
Your little turf of yeah, the right. World is this way.
Or you can just, so, you know, where's your consciousness going to land? Is it going to land in this structure, this mental thought structure? There's a time and place for that. Or is it going to land more in the experience of the moment, you know, and the, you know, whatever.
Who gives a shit about defending anything when you've got just the moment? Like, why would you spend your time?
Well, yeah, I know, and I do think there's a time and place to... I mean, we have to get through the day. And
these guys make a living from having opinions.
Yeah.
That's how they make money. They espouse opinions. They publish. They provide healing services and resources. They lecture. I mean, their bread and butter is about espousing.
They're all authors and that sort of thing.
Yeah, yeah. It's punditry.
Yeah.
It's punditry.
I mean, not to say there's not real emotions going on there. There very definitely are.
What was this thing again? Was it?
This was. I don't know. It was in some seminar, maybe in a college or something like that, and they videotaped this encounter, sort of a debate. You know, sort of the pragmatist atheist types.
I mean, to watch primate debate. From the vantage point of symptoms,
yeah.
Loyalty to symptoms, it's like watching Punch and Judy. It's like watching marionettes argue about,
yeah.
You know, who created them, who's holding the strings. You're really looking at marionettes evocatively occurring in pure mystery, presuming to take a causative position.
Yeah.
On the nature of reality, and then espouse it with great confidence.
Well, and I found myself taking sides, you know, like, yeah, good point, Deepak, and it's like, uh-oh, don't say that, you know, and it's like, here, you walked into a trap or whatever. And so
it's like scoring a fight.
It's all Monday morning quarterbacking, you know, but at the end of it, it's like, you know, you have two choices. You can argue these details and... your whatever belief system you've built up from what you've found and learned and stuff like that, or you can, I don't know, I don't want to say get beyond that, but, you know.
There's always, where's your proof, kind of, you know.
Yeah, everybody like thinks they have proofs, you know. And Deepak was talking about the proofs.
No one has proofs, so what makes their opinion better than, right. You know, a five-year-old?
Yeah.
Right.
Well, the thing is, there's physical proofs, you know. If you stay in the realm of the physical, then the one part supports the other part, you know. So, yeah, but if you only stay in the realm of the physical, then that's the as far as you get. You know. Although what Deepak was saying is, well, we now know that quantum physics is teaching us that it is, there is this interaction of the physical and the non-physical.
Interaction.
Yeah, kind of.
Cheers.
What the hell is the difference
between
the physical and the non-physical?
There's nothing going on at all. Why?
Physical is physical.
How could they ever have not been interacting?
It's an imagined distinction.
The last thing Deepak wants to put his hands on is how imaginary this is.
Yeah.
Right.
Because then all of them, all of the opinion, right, promulgators fall down. It's like it's a Humpty Dumpty thing. They have to maintain a high caloric output in their dreamscape. Mm. Otherwise, they all go down like Humpty Dumpty. You know, and you'd think, you'd like to think that someone with Deepak's edge on it, or perhaps even Sam Harris, who's an aspiring guru masquerading as an atheist, wants to keep this glued together. They want the lecture glued together. They want to be followed, you know, adored, adorned, adulated, right about something.
What if consciousness is just creating every moment?
Well,
and that's all there is.
What if
okay.
There isn't even
you make up anything you want about it.
Apparently so.
I mean, you can just create bullshit.
We do.
Yeah.
That's exactly what we do.
Isn't that what we come here for?
No.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I mean, there's nothing else than that.
No, there's nothing other
you
than this.
You can't verify anything?
No.
You can't substantiate anything?
No, you can't.
Nobody's ever seen a photon or a fucking electron?
No, nor will they ever, yeah.
What are we talking about?
I don't know. I don't know. It's good. Yeah, it's good.
Well, I hate to become biblical, but...
Oh, yeah, sure.
Do.
Why? We'd like to know you. We'd like to know you in the biblical sense.
Don't confuse the woman that brought the cake.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Oh, you didn't say it. You wanted to come back.
That's our version of biblical.
You mean you wanted to recite something from the Bible? Oh, I'm sorry.
Jeff, there was some kind of line you crossed there. I think that's your job.
That's the blushing line.
You did start it, though.
I did. You know, we should become as little children, that kind of thing. When you watch kids, I was just with my grandkids, and they're a riot. They're only in the present moment ever, and they don't remember what happened yesterday or 10 minutes ago. They'll, you know, I'll be like, oh, wasn't that fun in the pool yesterday when we did this? And they're like, what are you
talking about?
It was like yesterday. You know?
Yeah, really?
I mean, just, it's really...
Grandma, funny. Why are you filling yourself with ideas of the past?
Yeah, it's just so funny how present they are.
Pass the cake.
It's just, it's really cool to watch, you know, and just, you know, because I'm always in the past somewhere, you know. I'm not very much in the future, but I mean, I'm always like reflecting and, you know, whatever we do. But it's just wild to see how very present they are. And they're making it up as they go along, too.
And we sure train them otherwise, though.
We sure do. Yeah.
Eloise has learned how to make a face. My 9-month-old granddaughter.
She can make...
Yeah, she will make a goofy face out.
To get a reaction, yeah.
Yes, she does.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, God.
Great.
So there's somebody out there she's interacting with.
Pretty much, that's all this is. It's one goofy face after another.
I mean, that's the beginning and end of it all.
Yeah.
Cake's good, thank you.
Maybe that's the whole meaning of life. Just making a goofy face. Maybe that's all we need.
I can't hear you.
It's the whole meaning of life. Who can make the goofiest face?
No.
Forget about the save face thing. We're supposed to just make goofy faces.
There's a lot of people making faces.
Yeah.
is this about? Why are we here?
What?
Why are we here?
Why are we here?
Why are we here?
This
what's it about? Elf?
Appearing and disappearing.
He's just outside being.
If even quiet. So my latest experience is just having no memory.
Good.
And only just seeing, God damn, it's all this appearing and disappearing.
Yeah.
And being startled by it all. That's all.
He comes as a child.
And if somehow money appears in my world.
Well, that's your world only. I have to realize that.
Let's move in with him.
Teach his master.
Yeah.
Yeah. You're not singing to the choir now.
Abundance Workshops with Frank.
When do we start asking that question, though? What's it all about? When do we go from being that child that is not asking that question? They're just living.
Yeah.
You know, they're just living moment to moment and totally awake to all of it. When do you stop doing that and go,
that's when reincarnation appears. Because you don't decide to think that. You show up with that thought.
Oh, yeah?
Do you think that children don't have their reincarnated selves?
Well, they have to learn the language. They have to get familiar with where they recently appeared, I would say.
You mean their natural inclination is to just assume that they were here before? Is that what you're saying?
They don't know that. I mean, you show up with a hunger. Some people don't.
I don't know. I remember in elementary school, we would walk home from...
Let's see the paperwork on that shit.
It sounds pretty good. I mean, what the hell?
We would walk home from school, and there was this lady who was this super Christian type person, and she would take in a bunch of kids. Can you imagine that now? And, like, bring them into her house and serve, like, some cookies and stuff like that. And talk to us about Jesus and give us little crosses and stuff like that.
Oh, you're very nice.
Yeah. So, I mean, that's one time that, you know, I started to... I got a little cross that glowed in the dark, and I put it by the bed.
You should take you in a dark room. Leave
them. I'm blocking that out. Please don't bring it up.
Back to that biblical thing again.
She got biblical.
She became biblical with me.
All I could see was this glowing cross.
And Jesus, this very Caucasian picture of Jesus.
It was like Jesus was
she was just proselytizing.
She was just proselytizing. But you know, you're talking about when does it all start? I mean, I remember like, this is interesting, and okay, you know. I mean, I was open to things, and then to Sunday school and all that. And then when I got a little older, I'm like, I don't know, man. So I don't know when it actually starts.
Maybe it does start with teaching, like when you're at school.
Well, I think that will solicit a reaction, yeah.
Yeah, that's probably true. I went to Catholic school, man.
Oh, yeah.
There's some crazy stuff going on there. You're like, what?
Yeah.
How did that happen? I was just born and I had a sin on me already.
Yeah, that's like the first thing they tell you, first grade, day one. You have original sin.
You're screwed.
Jeez, you skip that part.
The little milk bottles with the black spots on them. Oh my gosh. That was just crazy. You think back,
you suck. Welcome to Christianity. And it's going to get worse. Welcome.
I got that pretty clear.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't like that.
Yes. Well, let's say you figure out when it, whatever it is, begins. Now you can commit yourself perhaps to saving the world, you know, or running around the neighborhood making sure it doesn't begin for all the kids in your neighborhood. You know? Or, you know, if you were an author of the quality of Sam Harris and Deepak Chopra and Richard Dawkins, then you could address large audiences through TED or whatever vehicle, you know.
and let everyone know not to raise their kids from the vantage point of, right, sin and accountability. You could start really young and raise your children from the delightful revelation that this is, right, a playhouse. Mm-hmm. So therefore you don't, right, the culture doesn't impose sin and obligation and accountability and internalization and shame and control on, right, the next generation, which we do from generation to generation. And I know an educator in the Waldorf thing that has watched many generations of children and parents, right, deal with the challenge of how do we educate? What's really going on here? And she's always been disappointed and surprised by how little, call it, awareness there is amongst the parent population. So we're talking about 20s and 30s, right? Mm-hmm. Young parents, 20s and 30s, with young children going into Waldorf education to be a little more progressive. And it blows her mind how young and naive and enabling the parents are of these out-of-control little impulsive children, because they don't know how to create healthful boundaries, healthful affection, and healthful frames of reference. So instead, the parents permit the children who don't really know what they're doing to run the conversation. Right? Mm-hmm. And so they will. Yeah. And so they will. And so she sees this profound, you know, kind of regrettable imbalance, rather than the ideal of, let's call it a mature and awakened, whatever that means, young adult in their 20s and 30s, raising children with a certain kind of care.
So it sounds like maybe the care of the pendulum swung too far, because before that it was very disciplinary.
Yes, I mean, I think every generation goes in a, you know, kind of a bizarre way.
Mismatch.
Right? Which is the kind of the unspoken milieu of that, right, generation, right? Depending on what's happening with the media and da-da-da-da-da. I mean, it's really too weird.
I just heard some kids in their 20s, not to segue off a little, just for a second, present it and talking about how medicated they were and all these experiences they had with all this medication and lithium. And, I mean, they were using big words. Like, they had researched all the stuff that had been done to them, how much, how many milligrams had been given to them, normal dosage versus what they were
giving, which was total
overdose. They were like 20, and I'm guessing this was not that far off from what they were talking about, like maybe a couple of years back.
Like ADD
teenage or something.
Like that.
Just all kinds, you know, who knows, bipolar diagnosis, just wrongful diagnosis, over-medication, insane, really insane stuff, but they, like, knew, you know, they researched it, they knew, like...
I believe it's very hard to find intelligently crafted, let's call it spiritually or mindfully mature, dialogue and investigation on the nature of the social agreements, the nature of the consciousness, the nature of education, the nature of financial systems, the nature of geophysical symptoms of sustainability. And when we turn to experts like Deepak, Harris, and Dawkins, all we get are narcissistic talking heads arguing about things which are really of no meaningful relevance to the demands of the culture, but just as kind of haughty entertainers. It's very, very difficult to find, it seems to me, within mainstream media or even so-called alternative media, where the intelligence of an awakened kind of point of view, and I know there's a lot of, you know, hubris and presumption in that, so I'm putting big quotes around it, right? Big quotes around it. But we don't see that kind of sobriety actually finding its way in the shared social conversation.
Does it exist then?
Good question.
I would bet that it does, and I would bet that the people that have that, taught that, that own that a little bit more probably, you know, they're not making a lot of money. You know, they know what they know, and they don't really care to
if you
necessarily
go,
thrust themselves forward and compete.
Yes. If you go to, let's just call it Advaitic yogic culture in the West, and the internet is full of gurus of any age, starting as early as 20-something, right, up to old men with beards, like our good friend, you know, Ken, Guru Ken, right? So we have all of these authorities, spirited authorities, espousing spiritual principles, awakening principles, to often a very rabid and naive audience that are more often concerned with the materica of their own suffering than with a much broader perspective. So we can't find a meaningful conversation from the Dawkins and the Deepaks and the Sam Harrises of the world. We certainly can't get anything, you know, meaningful out of the head of Microsoft or the
Bill Gates.
Bill Gates. No meaningful conversation is coming out of Bill Gates. It could be. You know, the government doesn't want to say anything of any intelligence because they want to keep everything illegal and just create, foment more and more hysteria. Right? And then when you think you could go to the gurus to get, like, something reasonable, and you won't. You won't even find it there because those environments are just full of, right, the proliferation of supplication.
More of the same.
And the audiences, the large audiences that go to an Adyashanti or wherever they go, to a, you know, to a Bentinho Massaro or an Eckhart Tolle or an Oprah Winfrey are all interested in whom? Themselves. They're all interested in the imagination of their personal portfolio of suffering. They're not even mature enough yet to just dispose of that, even for a short while, dispose of their own crisis, even for a short while, to have a meaningful conversation about the nature of reality itself. And were there an interface between that revelation and how we conduct ourselves as primates in a social experiment? Mm-hmm. Search high and wide, not hard, not easy to find. Very strange. And I'm not suggesting we're having one either, you know, or that you come to the Night Sky Sangha, which is better than being in Siberia, and think you're going to find it here. I'm not suggesting that. I'm just saying it's very curiously absent from the social rhetoric.
Not just absent, but retaliated against.
Yes, and even retaliated against.
Yeah, in my little experience that I have within.
And retaliated against.
Seriously, retaliated
against.
Just in any sort of, in trying to present yourself that way, let's say.
Now, we can take it's a delightfully, I'll call it extremist view. It's not really extreme. It's just an organic consequence of looking at the nature of reality in a very playful manner, right? So a moment ago, I was speaking from the point of view of, call it social relevance, right? Societal relevance, cultural relevance, right? And that evokes a certain kind of sentiment, right? A certain kind of passion or compassion with the state of things. Mm-hmm. There's a close cousin of that view, which is to see that the entirety of all that is appearing on Earth amongst the Homo sapiens is a proliferation of pure random chaos. And so we, the culture, are not even, call it, responsible or empowered to become something that we're not or to not express something that we're kind of, in a sense, destined to express. Because the frame of reference that you, including myself, hold about the present nature of reality is, in a sense, been conditioned.
Not in a sense, it absolutely has.
Has been imposed upon you in such a nefarious but not necessarily deliberate manner, or perhaps even deliberate manner, right? Right? So that we're feeling and thinking our way, acting, reacting generously or otherwise, our way through the present texture of our lives, kind of held back or forced into a very narrow range of enjoying or just being our experience.
That's what was fun in that movement with these kids, where I clearly have some opinion about these drugs, right? But then I'm like sitting reading Time magazine, and there's something about a drug, and it's like, my girl is playing on the radio, and I'm reading, side effects may include some kind of nasty discharge from your penis, blah, blah, blah. And I just fucking, I started laughing so hard. I was like, everyone's looking at me like, what is going on? And I'm like, because I'm like tapping my foot to my girl while reading about some kind of horrible discharge from your penis if you take this drug, while hearing these three teenagers talk about their horrible drugging experience. Really? I'm like, what the fuck is going on here?
Sounds like a carnival cruise.
Yeah, it was just too, it was like so bizarre that I was like, all I could do was just laugh hysterically.
Let's go to the captain's buffet table.
Yeah, I can't take a position on this. This is fucking weird.
Yeah, it's a practical joke on you.
Yeah. I had a penis, I probably would have once.
Medication makes other people more bearable, so then you give medication to the people. You know, it's like sad. Like, it's like, right. Medicate the bipolar so they're more tolerable to be around, you know, and for the rest of people.
Yeah.
But just not having any position about it was so, that's what was just funny, to see that, the bizarritude of, you know, That this clearly has no position. It's playing my girl while feeding, you know, creating me, while I'm reading Time magazine about the side effects, while three teenagers are. It doesn't care. It doesn't have a position.
No, it's like the Groucho Marx show.
Deepak would be looking for the, what is it? The synergy, not the synergy. You know, all the coincidences.
Synchronous. Yeah, right. He would be trying to tie it together as to what something meaningful for me. I mean, what?
Well, synchronicity is kind of funny, because what's the filter that one uses to feel or associate meaning with the observable synchronicity? And you can see even that is profoundly arbitrary.
Yeah.
Right?
Like, was not synchronistic.
Always.
I have a synchronicity.
Oh, you had one. So yours, you had a true one.
It's absolutely mind-boggling. So I have this DA meeting Friday mornings. And I've been struggling with this huge debt to American Express.
DA meeting?
David Anonymous. Everyone likes David, and they get together.
Anonymous.
Yeah.
There's only couple other people.
Yeah.
And I was sharing about how the American Express, through a lawyer, got a judgment against me. But on the paper, it said my company. It didn't say me.
Wow. Uh-huh.
And I was so delighted to share in this that they had got it all wrong, because the corporation had been dissolved for 4 years. It has nothing.
Sweet.
And I was kind of bragging about that.
I would.
Yes. And the minute the words weren't totally out of my mouth, everybody looks over, and down the driveway comes the sheriff's car.
Yeah.
Whoa. Oh, too much. I mean, the timing was, we just went, oh, they went crazy, because they thought, oh my God, what have we done? They're coming after me. I said, relax.
Everyone thinks they're coming after me. I know.
Relax. This is all mine. So I come to the door. And they told me they have this injunction, and that they want to come in my house and inventory my furniture.
Mm-hmm.
Wow. Holy smokes. And I thought it was just passing by.
I better call my lawyer.
Hmm.
And so then they went away.
Yeah. Just bring a truck.
Yes. What do you want to do? My sticks of furniture? You know, what do you do with them? Nobody wants them?
Yeah, really.
Anyway.
Oh, yeah. Oh, they're 30 cents on a dollar for sure.
That was a synchronicity beyond the comprehensible.
Yeah. Well, it's not to say that there's not cause and effect. You just don't know which one came first.
I don't even care.
But everything. Yeah.
It was
like
just
that.
Entertaining.
No, it's completely entertaining.
That's the memento thing. I'm chasing him. He's chasing me.
You could get all upset about it if you wanted. I mean, they were more upset, and it was my problem.
You know.
Well, I think there's always a level of whatever the left. Right brain thing going on where, we're always trying to make sense of something or we're trying to find comfort in what's happening it's out of our little box or whatever. When I was in Florida, my daughter was just like, there were just things happening one day where she burned her hand because she grabbed onto a pot, and then we're driving and a woman walks into the street almost right into her car, and I'm sitting in the car. And then after that, she turns around to see if the woman's all right. She drives up onto a curb. And then, right after that, a car almost hits us. Like, this was all within, an hour. And I was like, okay, that's three. It's done. See, I think everybody has these little things where, okay, the things happen in three. So now I feel comfortable because it's all over, And so I think we just do that. We just create things to make us either try to make sense of things or to make us comfortable with things that are uncomfortable.
And if you would check your biorhythms or whatever the heck and find correlation there, then you're a believer,
Right.
Although,
your horoscope, come on now.
Your horoscope or something like that.
You can't do anything with that shit. It's not available. It's not something you have in your hands you can work with.
It's a futile effort.
It's like a piece of wood.
Oh, so you think there's some kind of distinction between astrology and a piece of wood?
Damn right. I can't make any money out of astrology.
Oh.
That's so a big
you're
distinction.
You're saying you're a shitty astrologist, but a good carpenter.
Yeah, got it.
Okay. Thanks.
I'm an astrology.
We won't come to you for advice. Yeah.
I mean, I kind of already knew that, but I'm glad you clarified.
Random association, pattern recognition, stimulus of thought and language and storytelling and anecdotal expressiveness just...
It's all available.
...pours forth.
Yeah. You make it up.
So what's the problem?
I don't know. I mean, I don't necessarily want to come to a conclusion. I mean, I'm not saying there are not synchronicities. It's just that I don't know.
Well, Jamie still believes in cause and effect. It's like dealing with some kid.
Isn't the entirety of expressive creation appearing in and as your experience presently only synchronistic? Is there something other than synchronicity?
Yeah.
No.
It's hard to recognize from any given frame of mind, and that's the problem.
Well, the frame of mind is a closure.
Yeah, it is. That's what I mean. Yeah.
All frames of mind are a closure. They're a dead end. Mm. That imagines that interesting events that occur, and we can refer to them as synchronicities, serendipities, right? Confluence of events, felt and seen.
And you imagine that that's the end of it.
Isn't it nonstop? Okay. Isn't the entirety of your experience, regardless of what's occurring, regardless of the mood, of the association, of the way you're feeling psychically, spiritually, sensually, physically, emotionally, I mean, you are pure serendipity. The whole of creation is nonstop serendipity.
It's like no one walks around going, oh my God, guess what? Today, again, hydrogen and oxygen combined to make water. It was fucking amazing.
Yeah. Really? I didn't know I would wake up to an oxygenated planet.
Yeah, it's very synchronistic.
Yeah.
Well, it's only, you know, that we notice synchronicities, you know, like for the level of awake that you are at that particular moment, too. Like, how do you know that they're not happening all the time and you're just not noticing because you're not awake to it?
That's
you're preoccupied, which is
that's the adventure. That's the adventure. Mm. The adventure is to, if one is so inclined, right, some, if one is inspired, the adventure is to examine the ways in which we are asleep. And by doing so, we'll call it awareness, though it's really nothing in particular, is capable of kind of looking at itself for fun, can glean how asleep it is. And as it reflects upon its repetitive, presumptive nature, superstitious nature, it wakes up a little bit. It expands, you could say. It can feel itself not so seriously, not as the consequence of anything. And as that relaxes, as one's present awareness, right, in situ, right now, mm-hmm. You have to do it right now, because if you didn't do it in your past, it's too late, and you can't do it in your future because you don't have one. So you have to kind of do it right now. Feeling this as, I don't know. Right? So one's awareness, again, I'm not saying I know what that is or that it's anything at all. We could say we receive ourselves differently. What's the difference? By receiving ourselves with a certain kind of attentive care, there's a relaxation and perhaps expansivity of availability. Because just feeling this is what's occurring. That has a different texture in your experience than rumination, than association, than dwelling in memory or dwelling in future, and taking up interest, which is fine to do, taking up interest in the imagination of events. It's that simple, really. This is always present, but I can't say what presence is or not. Interest is the nature of your primary experience. Before you're anything, before you're a symptom of anything, you are interested.
Isn't there a simultaneity in the notion that your interest and what you're interested in are really inseparable? They're occurring simultaneously.
Subject, object, are all one.
Whatever it is, there's no other way to get at it.
No,
other than your interest.
Strangely self.
And there's nothing.
It's strangely self-fulfilling.
Yeah.
Because anything that appears in or to or as interest is not other than itself.
Self-interest.
Yeah. Yes. That's right. So to create the idea of having been born, of having a biologic or emotional, psychological history prior to this moment, is one way that the beauty of interest, the unadorned nature of interest, right, gets flooded with impression. It's self-fulfilling. Mm-hmm. See, this hasn't come from anywhere. It's not the consequence of anything. It's just interest appearing in itself as truly an unadorned plasma of just pure availability. So the biological system is an idea associated with the primacy of interest. The universe, the observable universe, and all of the sensations that appear in it are ideas that get their confidence, if you will, from disembodied interest. Unadorned interest. That's the primacy. So if there's an adventure, then that adventure is, oh, I can learn about myself, about anecdotal hysteria, association, rumination with the past, ideas promulgated, whether it's Deepak's ideas or whomever's ideas, all of the authorities that we may have turned to, either with interest or reluctantly, to be shamed and cajoled and twisted and formed into, right? Presuming that you're a person and not a very good one at that, right? Yeah, so all of that hysteria, all of that superstition, which I would argue plagues, right? Compromises the intelligence of the, call it the average bear. Right? Dwelling in Jellystone Park, was it? Yes. Yeah, of course. Jellystone Park. So if there's an adventure, it's not about finding remedies for what ails you circumstantially. Because what you take to be real circumstantially is just a complex portfolio of myth.
Well, you know, it seems like the inclination is to not, or the inclination, the way we end up moving is against adventure. It's like we gave up with the adventure. We want a solid story to tell. And the first part of that is identification with self, or, you know, ego, you know, the thought process and all that jazz, and physicality and all that jazz. But there's the end of adventure in a way, because you've solidified things.
That's why we do this, so that you can have a perfectly poignant revelation of how you shut down from adventure. Yeah.
When I was first in business, every piece of wood was 2 feet big. I would put it in my barn. Because I thought that it would be useful. And then at some point, the barn was full.
Yeah.
And I got a bulldozer to dig a hole, to put it in and burn it. Because I saw that it was a metaphor for verifying or validating that I actually had created something. Yeah. I built something.
Right.
I had existed.
Right. Yes.
And it was not useful.
No.
That's really what happens with all the thoughts that you're describing.
Yes, you could say that
you
thoughts are
barn up with them.
Vectors of I exist.
Hoarding thoughts, I guess.
Hoarding.
Yeah.
Hoarding them.
Yeah.
And then you have something that you can use to testify that you've had an existence when there's nothing going on.
Yes. You could say whatever we were referring to, that, right? Meaning when the innocence of a child starts to waft away and turn into the worrisomeness of a young adult that needs medications beyond healthful doses. Right? So we're looking at the proliferation, right, of a kind of an existential panic. Yeah. Right? Permeating the culture, permeating the soul, permeating the species, right? That you could say it might or might not be true, that has certain what appear to be causal replications, ramifications. But we can't really be sure. Because we just can't really be sure if anything that's occurring observably within the culture to our liking or disliking whether it seems progressive and sustainable or the opposite of that, is really the consequence of anything.
So that means we don't have to recycle or what?
Get it right down to it, don't you?
There's a membrane that you're gonna cross whether you like it or not. That membrane that you cross is that in the earlier stages of our seeking relief from our own tormented souls, that seeking relief from self is a strong motivator if you're lucky. If you're lucky, it's a strong motivator. So that you begin, on a certain apogee, right? A certain path to discover what really is going on here. How can I possibly live without fear and grief and sorrow and apprehension and disappointment and victimization and all of the addictive, color forms that accompany that? We're looking at the entire package of, disenfranchised, disingenuous existential panic. So what's the membrane then? The membrane is that you cross over from trying to resolve this from a primate orientation with respect to amelioration of suffering. You cross beyond that barrier. Yeah. Then this becomes something wholly other, wholly new, way stranger than you imagine. And you can't even find the motives that you used to be motivated by, which was to ameliorate your, quote, personal suffering.
I feel like, in a way, you're like testing your limits and boundaries that you, or make-believe that you placed on yourself, but you have to kind of test them in some way and experiment and experience them until you finally are like, fuck, this just doesn't make any sense. There's no limits, or they're infinite, or whatever, but I can't get a handle on it, and then it's like...
The metaphors for the profundity of this adventure are many and numerous and, in a sense, custom-made, right? The metaphors that rock for you are indicative of something about your personal experience, your personal unfolding, the quality and the texture of the insights that you've been gifted to have or gifted to see. Yeah. Yeah. But or and the actual passing through that membrane and daring to peek into what might be on the other side of it is wholly strange, is not human endeavor. Right? A lot of times we invest in so many things to do, so many gurus, so many remedies, so many practices as human endeavor to attempt to ameliorate our existential panic, our confusion, our vulnerability. Then we have to be confronted at some point that, oh my, this adventure was not ever about me. It's always been something of a more magnificent order of magnitude that I'm now getting a glimpse of. Then you start responding to that. It's a different conversation. It's a different yoga then.
Not even coming through me? Kind of thing?
No, because through would suggest other than.
Really?
Is there a me, as in an individuated participant, that something grander, greater, deeper is coming through?
No, I'm just thinking, like the rays of the sun kind of thing. You've got the sun, you've got rays coming through all these people or whatever. It's still the same sun. Parts of it, so.
Yeah, but see.
I mean, that's a creation.
Well,
imagination, but
that becomes a creation myth.
Yeah,
it's true, but see, that's how mind is oriented.
Yeah.
Right, mind is oriented toward creation myth.
Yeah.
It could be the great turtle. It could be the rays of the sun. It could be a really swell, fluffy zucchini bread. Right? And we hope that it's that. But see, anything that shows up in your atmosphere as an interpretation of whatever this is or isn't is a spontaneously arising creation.
Yeah,
yeah. Because, well, if you're out, let's say, during the daytime, and you take a moment, it doesn't have to be many, to have a relationship with what we call the sun, you're going to be blown away, blown apart. Such is the nature of that vibration and the relationship of that vibration. Having any moment of intimacy with the great fireball in the sky that may or may not be within the umbrella of the sky. And what's the sky exactly? I mean, we look up and it's blue, but is there a roof? There's no roof, right? I mean, in this building, there's a roof, but if you're outdoors, there's nothing really separating you from deep space. Even though it may appear to be blue and you can't really see the night sky, it's a mirage. But still, we are enveloped in multiple concentric layers of atmospheric vibration, electromagnetic and otherwise, that keep oxygen and nitrogen at the very least close enough to the surface of the terrestrial beatitude so we can fucking breathe. Now, you don't find, quote, an atmosphere, whatever that is, that we have on Earth so far in no other place that we've been able to discern yet.
Coming up.
And of course coming up. Most likely coming up.
They're building.
Hang on. I know spaceships. We're going to. I know. Telescopes. Yes. Hawaii. Yes. Of course.
Yes, you know about it.
On top of the volcano. Yes, of course. Yeah.
Fucking amazing.
We're going to find those fuckers now. And then who's that guy? Who's that actor? Matthew McConaughey is going to get in his spaceship and fucking fly there so that we can all grow zucchini again after the Great Dust Bowl. I get it. If you feel, any one of us feels the sun while outdoors, takes it in, gives it just a little stare, not a lot, obviously. It's strong enough that something, if it's a thing at all, that's 93 million miles away from here, whatever that means, will burn the fuck out of your retinas if you stare at it too long. We call that the sun. It's the great blinding beast in the sky. Why don't we call it, the great motherfucking blinding beast in the sky? Watch out.
You can't look at it.
Yeah.
But it supports life on Earth.
Yeah. I mean, you see how crazy it is? It's nuts. And every call it encounter, which is the present beatitude, what did we say earlier, of interest itself, is magnificent and unadorned. Now, it's possible, I dare say, that we can feel this, as in dwell in it, dwell as it, without succumbing to the lovely seduction of a creation myth.
All that's available is our attention to what's occurring in the moments occurring. I've got to tell you one little factoid.
Okay.
No, but it totally validates this. Then you're not going to believe.
It validates.
There's
that's what we're here for, validation.
Bear me out. There's a telescope.
Yes.
Down in the South Pole.
Ah.
That's been staring at the same spot forever. And it thinks that it has received a gravity wave.
Oh.
Four times. A billionth of a billionth of a billionth of a billionth of a second.
Like a conscious pulse.
Yes.
Yeah.
That something happened then related to what is the Big Bang.
Oh.
And they don't see that he's creating that in the moment.
Yeah.
That he's talking about it.
Yeah.
It didn't happen. It just happened then. All the shit's just occurring.
Yes.
The sun's just a big mass of goddamn explosions occurring right in the moment that it's occurring.
Yes.
That's all we have.
Yes. Even that's saying too much.
Yeah, like where this places its attention or interest. I mean,
you see, language again, and this is part of the revelation of how powerful language is as a vehicle for a creation myth. Language also can't help but to anthropomorphize.
Sure.
To animate.
Well, what fun would it be if we didn't do that?
I don't know.
We'd have nothing to pull apart.
What kind of Disney movies would we watch?
Frozen.
They're coming. Right. I don't know.
It's just that robot on the other world. You know, that's the ultimate in the other two parts.
Creation myth is an organic, you could say, flowering, expressive nature of consciousness itself. Mm-hmm. Anthropomorphization and creation myth. And the naming of things to make them seem much less than they actually are, mm-hmm. like the word the sun, or whatever words we use. What's really occurring, if anything's occurring, is far stranger, more profound and subtle and articulated and evaporating and refreshing. Then we have language.
It's so beyond anything we can say.
Four. We don't have language. We can string some poetry together to try to entrain our attention to see it, to feel it, to notice it. Which is a part of the metaphor of the waking up, right? Mm-hmm. Elasticity, right? Oh, wow, I'm kind of noticing what this might not be right now, but it's certainly texturally different than, right, being my experience being the consequence of rumination, of a creation myth. This way, experiencing itself is the lover. Mm. Experiencing itself without destination, without any kind of takeaway or consummation.
Or without the durable, independent entity, body.
Is the lover.
You know.
Yeah.
And that's why the through kind of makes me think in those terms. It's coming through this independent, durable self. And this is just like some phase that we're going through.
This is a phase wave. Present experiencing, for lack of a better way of accusing it, is kind of just a phase wave. So the challenge then, the yogic challenge, the Gordian's knot of yogic endeavor, is to see if you can chill out. From the reflex to participate in creation myth. Mm. It's that simple. I'm not making creation myth bad,
right,
or to be denied, mm-hmm. or to shame anyone that this occurs. It occurs. We're baked in it, steeped.
If you wanted to take that stance, you would have made a lot more money.
Well,
because you would have given a path for people to create a point of view and a path.
Were I interested in that, I'm sure I would have failed or sabotaged it somehow. Yeah. I go to SSA meetings. Self Sabotage Anonymous. Yeah. Hi. My name is Jeff. I've already failed. Hi, Jeff. Yeah, so have we. Oh, well, sorry. Glad to be here, I guess. Maybe.
I'm such a buzzkill.
At least I'm not in Siberia.
Yeah. Until you get kicked out of the meeting.
Yeah, until you get kicked out. Yeah. The sabotage is so bad. I know you guys don't like me. No, we really don't. We really like you. No, no, you don't like me. I'm sure of it. I got to get out of here.
The Pebble Hill story.
Yeah. I have to make sure that I can participate in something that I can sabotage. Otherwise, I'm not really happy.
Right. You know, this is only a matter of time. Before the axe falls. And he looks around and says, fuck you all. Just fuck you.
Yeah, really.
Get out of here.
Well, we've already passed through that membrane. Right?
I think so.
Fuck you. Fuck this. Fuck you. Fuck me. Fuck this. So I don't think there's anything left to sabotage. Maybe I finally got it out of my system.
I doubt it.
I doubt it. Yeah. You're probably right.
Well, I think as you, I don't know if it's age or maybe it is part of the awakening is just seeing how many of the creationists are going on in just your own world at one time.
Yeah, yeah.
Where it's like,
show up at Thanksgiving.
Show up for work.
Show up for work.
Just the craziness coming out of work. We're like,
yeah. No, it's like the Labor Day parade of creation myth.
Yeah.
All the shit coming out of everybody's mouth about what they believe is the next thing to do and how or why or covering your ass or throwing someone under the bus.
Yeah.
It's nonstop.
Yeah.
It's nonstop.
It's everybody defending their space,
yep.
Their thoughts. They're,
yep.
Everybody's defending everything.
Yes.
And if you just look at it, it's just like, oh, gosh.
Yeah.
Here's the little joke I'm in now.
Right.
You know?
Yep.
And just trying to look at it as just being in this little joke.
It's a little joke. Egotism, were there such a thing, could be characterized as perpetual defensiveness. Perpetual compensation.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And they want to make you like one of them.
Mm-hmm. Well, absolutely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Nobody wants to suffer alone. This is what we're up against. And this is what consciousness, you could say, does. It's puzzle. Right?
Dealing with the zombies.
Yeah. Well, you know, make peace with your inner zombie. Mm-hmm. Right? Really, make peace with your inner zombie. And as you, let's call it, come clean with the inventory of self, the superficial, contentious, compensatory image of oneself, then if you're lucky, it starts to, you know, drop away. Then you go straight to humor.
Zombies, yeah.
This is the original conspiracy myth.
Yeah.
Well, it's better if you do. If you just wind up with more questions than answers, I think.
Yeah.
I feel like I'm going the opposite direction of trying to figure things out.
Yeah.
It's futile, you know. Mm-hmm. Doing a little less every day.
Mm-hmm. It's not common that you're encouraged to take up residence in yourself as the pure personification of interest. Without having anything to show for yourself, anything to prove, anything to justify your existence.
Like in human terms.
The entire culture places this demand, you know, to be influenced, to be convinced, to take a position, to consume, to vote for a thing, against a thing. It's contentious everywhere you look. Every billboard is contentious. Every TV show is contentious. Every advertisement, every news report. It's an ocean of contention because of the profound confusion, right, pandemic in the, right? The average bear's consciousness, the way this miracle under the great blinding motherfuck ball in the sky looks and feels. It's a thin veneer. The biologic proliferation on the surface of what we call Earth is a remarkably thin veneer where the right mix of gases are held under an invisible envelope of electromagnetic and or gravitational, call it wave or current. And we are walking around as terrestrial creatures in this very, very thin veneer that permits biologic replication on orders of magnitude that we have not yet found any place else in what we call the known universe. So in one sense, until we find 10,000 at a minimum other planets teeming with carbon or silicon-based life that's actually able to exit its atmosphere, we're pretty much alone. And it could be any day now, once they finish this telescope, or maybe the Vulcans will show up and go, you guys better change course, otherwise it's going to be a shitstorm. You know, I don't know, Spock will come out and do this kind of thing that, you know, the Kohen Jews do with the Torah, splitting the fingers apart, you know, live long and prosper as, you know. A Kohen are, what, I don't, they're not quite a tribe, but it's a bloodline amongst the Hebrews that were permitted to carry the Torah. And even in modern day synagogues, more orthodox than not, if a Kohen shows up, even if they're not a ceremonial, right, religious following Jew, if a Kohen shows up and the rabbi knows about it, they're going to be asked to carry the Torah.
Is this a last name?
No.
Or just a name of their
sort of a something? Bloodline?
It's a bloodline. I am one.
Yeah.
Don't ask me why. My circumcision hurt as much as the next guy's. Maybe more. I don't know.
Wow. Have you been asked to carry?
I did. Yeah. I went to my sister's Orthodox shul in Long Island. And I mean, I'm as observant a Jew as, you know, Idi Amin or something. The rabbi very graciously said, oh, you carry the Torah. I said, I'm in.
He didn't say, oh, you? Oh.
No, he would have liked to, but I don't think that was ceremony.
How did he know?
I don't know. I think my sister or her
so
husband
this is a
or something.
Thing. This is a patriarchal type of thing.
It might be matriarchal. I'm not even sure if it's if the Kohen line is.
How is that?
Someone tells you and you just go with it. We could look it up.
Like everything
else. You know, do more interesting research. But it's interesting. And now it goes back. We were talking biblically, right? We may as well stay with it. Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, you opened the floodgates, so now we can go biblical.
In the beginning.
The Torah, right, as a scroll, as a teaching, right, was also a metaphoric body for radiance, for transmutation in consciousness. And the Kohanes, for whatever reason, I mean, we could go into the creation myth of the Kohanes, had what it took to be able to carry the scrolls and, right, project that radiance.
Are you sure it wasn't just because they're strong?
I don't think they were Minoans. Yeah. Anyway, it's a kind of a fun little myth to play with.
Well, there's a lot in the whole Jewish culture that has a point of origin that is a little shrouded in mystery.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Yeah.
They've been studying the Torah since the beginning of time.
Yeah. That's right. And I mean the Torah, the what's the thing that you scan?
Zohar.
The Zohar. Mm. Yeah, all of these vibratory tools of transcendent and radiant consciousness are used, you know, skillfully in the in those early kinds of Gnostic endeavor, right?
Mm-hmm.
Pre-Christian Gnostic endeavor.
Right? In the beginning.
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know what the point of all of that digression was.
Where's the Torah?
We should get one. Yeah.
Where's your special magic Torah?
Yeah.
Is it in that little fanny pack?
Yeah, I keep a mini mini Torah in the fanny pack.
It's small.
If there were a cultivation in a yogic field, then if you wanted something to do, right? If you wanted a strategy to deploy,
mm-hmm.
right? I mean, you know, we can talk about various contemporary gurus and get a sense of what strategies that they attempt to employ, deploy, right? Share with the brethren to, I don't know, do something about something, right? So if there's a strategy, you could say, oh, don't do anything about anything. Lay it down. Now, how do you do that, or whatever that implies, with your present consciousness, whether you're happy, irritable, neutral, or, right, 1,000 iterations in between? Don't do anything about anything. Now, that doesn't necessarily mean sit on your hands, because it's a more subtle invitation. So why not be yourself? Good luck not being yourself, and whatever shows up in you as you in relationship to the incredible provocative myth creation that goes on unendingly, do nothing about nothing. Change nothing. Seek for nothing. Watch yourself unfold and express with the same kind of disinterest that you might have to a children's cartoon occurring in the corner of the room while you're making lunch.
Makes for a very short obituary.
It does.
She did nothing.
She does make for a short obituary. That's right. Yeah. And it's not a suggestion for inactivity. Or any kind of renunciation, really, at all.
Yeah.
So it's kind of weird, because we're not talking about an effort or a vow of any kind. Because your present experience is flowering, is radiant, is provocative, is seductive, and full of moving and undulating myth creation from moment to moment. From mood to mood, from event to event, from reaction to reaction. And it's not that difficult to see that there's no way that you are in charge of or in control of what's appearing in your experience at this level of granularity. The only way you can come up with any confidence that you chose or decided anything is by not paying attention to what actually happened.
And then you're constantly distracted in some way. You're never paying any attention to what's actually happening.
That's true. As we live in mentation, which is representation, we're not, you could say, fully sensorially engaged with, right, the richness of the moment, because we're, in a sense, withdrawn from the, right, the sensuality or physicality of one's present experience, and the attention, right, the interest and attention have kind of taken up residence in what we'll call the neocortex, right? In the free associating frontal brain. So we're daydreaming while alive. Pretty much, right? Pretty much living in a nonstop daydream during what we call the waking state. We sure as shit are daydreaming in dreaming sleep, but that's night dreaming, right? And in deep sleep, who knows, hard to say. Really? Same evidence that the five-year-old has. You know, yeah, tell me all about it. But mommy, well, it looked like that. You might believe a five-year-old, actually, in that case. You're probably onto something.
Well, even at night, it's like daydream. You can't even say, you know, I mean, it's cute, but it's like I've had just as real experiences dreaming in the dream, seemingly anyway. The same.
Yeah.
You know, heat, smell, all that.
Sure. Yeah, you don't bleed quite the same way.
Well, it still comes out warm and red from my recent experience.
Mm-hmm.
Not my blood. Somebody got killed.
Thanks for revealing. Somebody's waving a poor bot.
The fact that she knows it's warm.
Did you do it just to watch him?
No, that was like I got to experience it. It felt like to me, I experienced what it felt like. I really experienced what it would be like to kill somebody, not in people terms, but sensorially in a dream.
Cool.
Anyway, sorry. I just like to derail.
Mental note, don't kiss Francina.
Really?
You leave your pants or your bed.
Certainly not in her dream.
That was good fun.
Don't start lucid dreaming. Oh, no, that's not.
That's what, this? The, like now already?
Yeah, I'm confused in my terms.
Anyway, so daydreaming.
Explore what it feels like or what it might suggest to you to do nothing about nothing. There's no control agenda now on what is appearing as present experience, the way that it's appearing. I'm not trying to squeeze some kind of enlightenment from it. I'm not disappointed in it. I don't have to do anything about what appears to be occurring. Because there's no entity in here that's genuinely harmable or afflicted by the magic of miscreation.
You know, looking at, I mean, I have a bunch of different things. I don't know how I'm going to get it out, but I can see looking at it impassionately. That could include just looking at this daydreaming and the thoughts and all that, but that's so magnetic. That just, it's like gravity. You get close to it, sucks you in, you know? So that is like maybe for a more advanced stage for me. I don't know. But that's sort of an aside. But I guess what I'm thinking is that there's this just impassionately looking at it. Without another, just seeing it, observing it, without putting some flavor to it. But at the same time, I feel that there's this great energy and total passion at the same time, and I'm trying to handle this stuff. You know, I'm just trying to figure out where it fits. And again, you know, this is getting into this thought process.
When you infuse the present impersonal plasma with self, then you can't help but to take up arms against it or to create impulses and impressions which place you back once again in the picture. You see? So then you're seduced as an action figure, as someone to process this, to do something with it, perhaps something better, eligible, more subtle. You see? And so the anthropomorphization of self created out of thin air takes root again. And then once it takes root, you could refer to yourself as being sufficiently advanced or insufficiently advanced. Well, advanced with what? An idea? You see? So this proliferates nonstop with great verve and solicits and elicits ideation, yeah, which create the imagination of a disparate entity, of a self. And then it starts adorning itself with qualities like availability or inavailability, worthiness or unworthiness.
And that's where the, trying to think of a better word, the impassioned approach, the just seeing it for what it, whatever it is it may be, you know, without adornment, without adding something to it, without projecting something, as much as possible, you're just open to it.
All this is open, but open is not a verb.
Yeah, and it can include all that stuff.
It has to.
It has to. It is.
It has to. Yeah. Right.
But it, in a way, it almost sounds like it's soulless. But really, it seems like it's the very depth of soul. You know what I mean? Because it's,
emptiness
it's like,
is funny that way.
Yeah.
The true absence of self is funny that way.
Yeah.
Because you might get a sense of being soulless, but you might get a sense of being the primacy of soul fullness. Emptiness is strange that way because it's not anything, but it's not nothing. Emptiness is not anything, but it's not nothing. So it can appear to you in the brilliance of you as soulless with profound delight. It can appear to you as soul fullness with profound delight. And it doesn't give a fuck, because no one here is about to be right, but no one here is about to be wrong either.
That would imply that nothing is ever out of place, if place is something fabricated in perception.
So are things.
Right.
Things, fabricated.
Concepts, ideas.
So is the subjective nature that you and I take for granted as, you know, feeling, living beings is also fabrication. What if an adventure or a relationship with freedom was completely non-referential? It had nothing to do with the imaginary field of what we call human. So it was really not the relief of anything. What if we're using the word freedom to refer to a texture of awareness, right? A texture of availability had nothing to do with relief from, which is that membrane I was kind of playing around with earlier, that there's a great force or agenda of having relief from, which punctuates the journey of, call it enlightenment or whatever the hell you want to call it. But now you have to face that this is not about relief from.
There's nowhere to go and you can't escape. There's no, where the fuck are you going?
But in feeling it and getting accustomed to it, your vocabulary is going to shift. Your spoken vocabulary is going to shift. Your experiential vocabulary is going to shift. What motivates and moves and seduces you is going to shift as you become more adroitly comfortable that this, as in right here, is not about anything, nor is it relief from. I don't know what our dear friends Deepak and Harris and Dawkins would say
they wouldn't
about it.
Yeah.
I don't know. I think Tupac could go there, no?
Yeah, he would. He would, but he would use a lot of words and jazz it up a lot.
Yeah.
He'd put, like, little, you know, rubies in the frame.
I think Deepak is a compulsive adornment freak.
Yeah.
I don't really know if he has a confident easefulness with this not being about anything. Because he so compulsively, as all of these pundits do, make this about something. Weave in the physics and the this and the that to create, you know, attractive pageantry.
Sometimes the intelligence gets in the way, it seems. it's all the patterns.
The fact that he's a medical doctor and, that's his background. So
he's just a smart
doctors
guy.
Doctors are always, they're always advising people how to get better, how to do this.
These are symptoms of a kind of compulsive narcissism. Which is cool. I mean, great artists and actors, right, have this kind of energy. It's an expressive energy.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's a dream weaving kind of energy that makes this about something to enroll you as a student, devotee, or paying customer.
Well, sort of like modern art, there's all this practice, and you learn how to fit your draw, and then you do this and this and this, and then finally you're like, this is art, but it's just this blank. I'm like, that's nothing. Naked people or whatever.
Could interest be a piranha?
That's what it feels like to me. In
other words, same word.
You eat anything that moves.
It does, doesn't it?
There's a great
that's what girls are saying. So trying to distinguish
it if you ever get a chance
between interest and piranha
specimens.
It's really
good.
Just eat anything.
I'll tell you
Well, maybe that's the same. Like, if this is just like the biggest narcissist ever, what this is.
Yes.
It's in love with itself. Then that just seems to me, I guess, like a kind of zooming in and out or focusing is like, in love with itself as a person is one mode. In love with itself, you could go like kind of zoom out a little.
Mangrove,
or something. Mm-hmm. I don't know where I'm going.
The mangrove swamp is a large entity. Right. It's not just a tree. It's the whole,
It's an ecosystem.
It's a whole ecosystem. And you've always been adroit at looking at ecosystems
on doubt of that because it's so ridiculous.
Greater and greater, right?
I mean, expansiveness. It appears to be an aspect of something of this artist, but I can't even. I have a hard time with that. I guess if it's a spontaneously occurring ecosystem, like normally our idea of ecosystem is cause and effect. Very heavily cause and effect based.
Yes.
So to think of something as being a spontaneously occurring in an instant ecosystem is very bizarre.
Yes.
What does that even mean?
Yes.
Is that if there's no, it's not like you, it's not continuous. It's not like you did something in this and then a hawk ate a bird. It's like, no. Instantaneously, spontaneously occurring together.
Non-durable. Disappearing ecosystem.
And recreated every completely anew.
Yep. Yes. Well, if you look at the so-called insight from the molecular or submolecular or atomic levels, that's what you're seeing.
Mm-hmm.
You're seeing a spontaneously arising, disappearing ecosystem, which is as small as the Higgs and as large as the so-called volume of the observable universe. Even though the observable universe isn't actually occurring in a volume.
It's a plane.
Okay, it's a rhombus. It's a rhombus. It's a tetrahedron.
It's a flat goddamn thing.
Okay.
Mobius strip.
Have you ever heard of this guy, Peter Russell?
Yes.
Yeah.
I listened to him. Have you heard of him?
heard of them, but
I listened to it last night.
Jeff passed that around, the privacy of consciousness.
Oh, yeah. You do. I just watched that today. I didn't know that was a thing here already. I missed it.
Well, it can be again.
Oh. I'm foggy on it, to be honest. It
can be again.
I thought it was pretty good. Like, for, you know, I felt like I could understand some of it. Of course, I don't now, but...
Well, you can't explain it. Doesn't mean you don't really understand it.
Any representation that occurs, whether it's a great talk by Peter Russell or a book read or... let's say an encounter with a sunset or something, right? Mm-hmm. Every representation is just that. It's a fleeting, perhaps poetic representation of the primacy of the mystery of interest.
It's just futile. It's like trying to make sense of every single little dream you've ever had or analyzing.
If the goal is to make sense, then futility is a close cousin. But just to see it as impersonal, right, just arising, yes.
Energetic.
Then it's no question of whether it possesses or doesn't have any utility.
I guess so, but then it seems like it would feel... I could really feel fortified if I had some great understanding of what he was saying in a deeper way.
Well, see, that's good. That's why his kind of presentation creates a pressure rather than a release. Mm. That's what's wrong with Peter Russell.
Mm. What's wrong with anybody? Because if
the takeaway from the encounter is you or any of us wanting to rise to the occasion to have as poignant an understanding of what's being spoken, well, now you're on the greed train for improved experience. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with being on the greed train for improved experience, but that's where the association takes you.
Improved human experience.
Yes,
that's the kicker.
That's right.
So I guess I still experience things like envy and frustration.
Why not?
Yeah.
Why not? And why not, why shouldn't those be, let's call it, you know, experientially motivating factors for you to do or not do a thing? Maybe you'll listen to the talk another time, you know, in a quiet room so that you can get the most out of it possible. Mm-hmm. Or maybe you'll listen to it with a friend and do start and stop and really dissect what the implications are, right?
Was that some sort of presupposition or something?
No. No. It's a very interesting art to do nothing about nothing.
Which doesn't mean not doing any of those things you just mentioned.
No, it doesn't exclude anything.
I mean, it's almost like give Caesar what's Caesar's or something. You know, it's like
he's getting
biblical. Yeah, I'm getting. You know, it's like do the thing that
or at least Roman
that's right at the time. So if you're if you're reading an article and it's an intellectual thing, you take it intellectually, you bounce it off other. Mm-hmm. Ideas that you have and that sort of thing. Or if you're having a dream that's far out, I mean, I love to just go with the dream. I just love the feeling of that if I wake up, you know, or not. Just sort of hanging out with that feeling. In my case, I don't really want to dissect it and figure out what it meant. You know, I just want to see, I just want to be there with it. You know?
Yeah.
So there's a time and a place.
Season
for every season.
Yeah.
The interest of occupying
time and place.
The interest of occupying your present experience for it to be joyful and or sustainably joyful is a very, very, very subtle creation myth.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yes. And biologically, if there is such a thing, we can understand how, right, the conglomeration of cells and sensitivity moves toward ease or relaxation or perhaps excitation or replication, if that's its interest, or, right, whatever is appearing in the biological field, like a fast-moving dinosaur.
What was that?
Tiny little spider.
Jeez.
It went under your
pillow. That's what I was thinking.
It's on the bottom. Like it's
coming for you.
And you probably squished it.
Killed
no,
it. No,
oh, there
it
is.
Got away. Oh,
there it is.
Oh,
coming back.
Oh,
coming back.
Hard to see.
No,
it's
a
cockroach.
All I saw was
it's
a shadow. I didn't
oh,
know
it's
what.
An earwig.
Oh,
you guys, my goodness. You guys obviously don't live in the woods. These things just run around my house. I'm like, oh, look.
I just don't like the name. Yeah.
As I was saying.
Well, it sounds like something that'll curl in your ear when
you
sleep.
You charged me.
Oh,
maybe I didn't think you could move that.
The earwig made me kill those people.
Talk about being awake.
That was a great sound.
You're
where
like, out of the way.
Fire up. That's like George Costanza.
George Costanza with a clown.
Cue earwig. Like run across the Jamie's pillow.
I don't know if I want to sit down or not.
It was just a clever diversion from the point at hand.
I didn't want
to
hear the truth.
He's never going to see
that's right.
Again.
I can't handle the truth.
So you went and created a fast walking earwig so you could get all excited and run out of its path.
I didn't know what it was.
It looked like a ghost.
Diverge.
Like a spider ghost.
I can't see.
It was running.
It was hard to see what it was. Yeah, but I think was it like 1,000 acres?
You knew where it was going. That's all I can see.
Okay, yeah, right
to
me.
There it goes.
It seemed to have a destination. Let's scare the fuck out of that guy.
Well, I have a favorite saying from that book. The lilies of the field do not toil. And it fits in with the I need do nothing. They just sort of...
Yeah.
I don't know. They're just being.
Mm-hmm.
That was the message of it.
Right.
Being. How do you
be there?
You know?
Right. Mm-hmm.
How do you not be? You can't not be.
Right.
Okay. So,
well, you can certainly worry about it.
Oh. I'll pass on that. Plenty of reps for that. Like moms and whatnot.
This is your discovery to make. This is your adventure. All the tools, if there were any, are at your disposal. Nothing's being hidden from you, deliberately or otherwise.
Wait, there's nothing you need to know. There's nothing where you need to go. Nothing you need to collect.